Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Welcome to Beneath the Surface. Paul Morano here. Glad you could join us tonight at the WCAP Studios, which happens to be the new WCAP Studios here at WCAP in Lowell. Same city, same state, right around the corner. My guest tonight, Mr. Bobbert LeBlanc. Mr. Bobbert, welcome to Beneath the Surface.
Thank you for having me here, Paul.
The man behind the legend, that's what I call you.
Am I really?
Yes.
Am I a legend? Maybe in your mind?
In your own mind.
In my own mind?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. 978-454-4980. I think during the show we'll probably be working out a few kinks because it is actually a new setup for the WCAP studio, and I can... barely hear myself on the headphones, but I guess that's maybe going to be the new normal. But as long as Cindy, our producer, can hear us and everyone else can hear us, I guess that's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
Oh, you come in very well.
Ah.
All right, ladies and gentle things. By the way, before I tell you the topic, this is Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meet every Monday evening between 10 and 11 p.m., bringing... a little sanity into our age of insanity. What is it, Bob?
No.
What is it, Bob?
I don't remember.
bringing a little... what is it?
What was it again?
Bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity. I can't hear you.
Oh, geez.
You were going to say...
yes?
Bringing a little life into our culture of death.
Cindy knows it. Our producer
Cindy knows
it. If I know
it, then you should know it.
That's right, Mr. Bobbert.
You know, I think I blank out when you start talking all that stuff.
When I start talking nonsense? You just
blank it's
out?
Not nonsense. It's just like, okay, this is just going to be repetitive stuff,
right.
Nothing new. So
the repetitive intro, you're right. So you don't have to listen. You don't have to zone in.
I don't have to. As soon as I hear, okay, Bobbert, or something of that nature, I'm going, okay, I need to start paying attention again.
That's so like me. That's so like me. I'm zoned out until I have to be zoned in.
Yeah. Well, for me, especially since I'm a guest, I'm always thinking, okay, what am I going to say? What am I going to say? What am I going to say? You know, so I'm always focused on that. And sometimes, you know, I'm not focused on maybe what you're saying.
You know what? I think we should talk about this after the air. I think you have a point there. I think that you're too focused on what you're going to say, and it takes away a little bit from the conversational style of the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's very possible.
And very often, I don't know if you remember this, but often you say, no, that's not the direction I want to go to. I want to talk about this.
Right.
You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of teacher in me. I have certain things that I want to say in the lesson.
Yeah.
And I have to hit those points or else.
Yeah. And of course I teach, so I understand that. But this is, as you know, this is supposed to be Socratic dialogue.
Right.
Yeah.
I've not really learned, that thing. That's something I feel I really do need to learn.
Yeah.
And I've not mastered that technique and I need to. I acknowledge that as a weakness of mine.
Well, with regard to the show, the technique, all we have to do is listen to each other and react to it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, have a few bulleted points in front of you that you want to get to if you'd like, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But that's all I do really for these shows.
Well, my main fear, this is a fear thing here.
Yes.
Let's bring up since we're talking about this.
Yeah, let's delve beneath the psyche surface of Mr. Bobbert. Go ahead.
My main fear is that my brain will completely go blank.
It'll freeze.
It'll freeze. Yeah. You'll ask me something and I'll have the information somewhere stored away in my mind, but it won't come to the front.
Yeah. So when it is in the front, you want to jump at it.
I want to hold on to it.
Yeah, yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And before it even disappears.
Before
because
it disappears. Yeah.
Because I often have this. I will have these great thoughts.
Yeah.
And I'll say, I need to say this to somebody. And then 5 minutes later, I've completely forgotten what I thought about.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny because I think those things repetitively. So I think I'm a genius because I think all these genius thoughts all the time.
Yeah.
But really, it's just a repetition of maybe three or four different thoughts.
Yes. Well, I tell you what, that's, you know, forgetting what you're about to say because you're waiting for someone else to finish their thought.
Right. Happens all the time.
It happens to the best of us. I'm telling you. And the rest of us.
Ah,
as they say. Anyway, I mean, that's the problem with talking with somebody who doesn't shut up.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. They continue a point and they belabor it for about 5 minutes when it could have been 5 seconds.
Uh-huh.
And by that time, you have forgotten two or three main points that you want to say about that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I often want to respond to specific things that they say early in their talk. What, you know.
Right.
And you're going, okay.
And you know what? That's what Socratic dialogue is all about. You say a little something, somebody else says a little something, and you go back and forth with those little somethings. You don't do speeches.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Well, I'm very good at that, I think. I don't like to talk very long. Mm. I really don't. Sometimes I get lost in a thought and I'm trying to work my way through it.
So in a sense you're thinking out loud with your talking.
Yeah. Right. And that's usually when I think I'm not presenting this as well as I think I should be because I'm thinking while I'm talking. Rather than being, in some sense, prepared with bullet points.
I'm hearing, Cindy, that Bob is a little louder than me, and that's what my headphones also hear.
Well, yeah, because he's louder than you because he wants to be so
he's not any closer.
That I turned him up
I'm sorry.
Kept you where you are because you sound good and he doesn't.
Well, I didn't. To me, it just sounds like at least.
Who's barely coming over as anything?
At least through my headphones, that I'm very low and he isn't.
Maybe you're just hearing.
I'm getting that from people who are listening too.
Oh, you are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that. Enough of our
studio problems.
Studio conversation and psychological conversation.
Paul.
What was that?
Stop complaining.
that's what Cindy behind the glass is supposed to do. Listen to our complaints.
Act on them, right?
As long as you say them with a smile, as I am. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. 978-454-4980. You're listening to Beneath the Surface, even though we've remained above the surface up until this moment. But again, if you want to get in touch with us, 978-454-4980 or comments at my website at paulmorano.com. Paulmorano.com. All right, our topic for tonight, ladies and gentle things, equality. Yep. So one word, equality.
Well, I actually think that's wrong. You really want to call this show equality?
Well, that's what you wanted to call it. So
I wanted to call it All Men Are Created Equal.
You did?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I thought you said let's do a show on equality, didn't you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe I wasn't specific enough in the email.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Well, I tell you what, we can name it one of those two.
Okay. All right. Well, because I really do love, that's a very short, phrase, because equality can mean a lot of things to people. But when you talk about all men are created equal, you're getting very specific.
And I want to get specific, but first let's begin being a little more general.
Okay.
Right? Define equality.
Define equality.
In the most general sense.
Well, I wasn't expecting that, but most of the time I think of equality in a mathematical sense.
Yes.
You know, that this number is equal to that number, or this side of the equation is equal to that side of the equation, which implies a sameness in things. And so and I think we've gone overboard when we go further into this. I think we've gone overboard on thinking equality means sameness in all respects.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about all men are created equal.
Well, before we get to that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm still.
We still haven't explained it. I thought I was being short here. Okay.
No. I'm still on the general idea of equality, not with men, not with humans.
Okay.
Just the general notion of equality, equalness.
Right. We do some sort of abstraction when we do this. We abstract something, and we see some sort of sameness between two things, and usually it refers to some sort of quantity rather than quality.
And that's what you're talking about with mathematics.
Right, yeah. Right.
Some kind of quantitative sameness.
Right.
Yeah. Now, before we get to all men are created equal, would you say, Mr. Bob, that all individual members of any species is created equal?
Yeah.
You
well, and yes, they're because I actually want to go into this later. Maybe we can delve beneath the surface on this. But yes, I would say they're the same in the same regard that all men are created equal in some sort of analogous sense. Analogous sense, and what I mean that is because. Really, my point in all this.
Are all dogs equal?
Yeah, they are equal in a certain sense.
In what respect is a dachshund or a poodle equal to a Great Dane? What is this equality that we're talking about?
With this equality would be in their nature. Would be solely in the fact that they have this.
And that is what you mean by you need to abstract in order to even consider equality.
Right.
Because obviously one is very big, the other one is very small, one runs fast, the other slow. So if you're not ready to or are willing to abstract this notion of a species nature as being equal, then the notion that all of these various breeds of dogs are equal is almost nonsensical.
It is. And that would be the very, very point that I'm going to make later on is that In fact, I mean, there are a lot of similarities for people. I mean, in general, if we look across the entire human species, we are fairly closely together compared to dogs.
Humans are closely together. What do you mean?
I mean, as far as the
very similar.
Very similar. The differences are not large when we look at you compared to dogs.
Not to be purposely politically incorrect, but would you compare analogously breeds of dogs to races or ethnicities of humans?
Actually, I tend to downplay. I think the races that we have, especially the ones that are related to skin color, I really think those are really false abstractions. They're not really meaningful.
Well, would you say that breeds of dogs are meaningful?
Yes, because humans have kind of tried to separate the dogs into these different functions.
So it was man-made genetics that made that meaningful.
Right. You have
genetic manipulation.
You have shepherd dogs.
Yeah,
you have hunting dogs.
You have all those dogs. Yeah.
And so that there's different functions.
Well, let me give you another example. Asian elephants and African elephants. They're both elephants, but they look and act differently.
Yeah. Well, see, I don't know enough about the biology of elephants.
Well, in your mind, think about them. African elephants are considerably bigger.
Right. Well, I know that one is bigger than the other. I don't know which one is bigger. I know that there are differences, but the thing that I really don't know are they two different things because their population are separated? One's in India and the other one's in Africa.
Yeah.
Are they really two species where they can't interbreed with each other?
I believe it's the former. I think that they're both elephants, but they're different, breeds, or if you will, they evolved into looking and acting a little differently, but they're still elephants. And I would imagine if you get an Asian and an African elephant together, they could procreate or reproduce. But I'm not positive. Maybe we can Google that before the next when we come back after this little break.
Okay.
What do you think?
Sure.
All right. Well, we'll let you do that. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. Or paulmorano.com. You can get us either way. Cindy's behind the glass. Bob is across from me. My name is Paul Morano, and you are you. We'll be right back. Beneath the Surface, 978-454-4980 is our phone number. 978-454-4980. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. 980 on your dial and various places on the internet and podcasted all over the world. Paul Morano with my guest tonight, Mr. Bob LeBlanc,
Not to be confused with the commercial that we had here.
We just had it a couple minutes ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not you.
I'm not the attorney, Bob LeBlanc.
No, that's not you.
And he has a show on Saturday mornings. I'm not him. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
I'm just some guy, you know?
You're another Bob LeBlanc.
Yes.
You're the philosopher, Bob LeBlanc.
And the historian.
And the historian. Okay. So before the break, we had talked about, the name of the show is going to be All Men Are Created Equal. And we talked about equality in general and what that might mean and what it doesn't mean and how it relates to the things of the world. We talked about how you said, and this, I think this is a very important point, that equality is in the essence or the nature of a species. And if you're a member of that species, you are equal in as much as you share in that nature. So, like we said earlier, a little poodle is equal in that sense, in its dogness, to a Great Dane or a German Shepherd. Goldfish is equal to a great white shark, even though they're very, very different. All right, let's turn our focus to human beings.
Yes.
Because that's what our main focus is tonight.
And the equals, when we talk about all men are created equal, goes beyond the essence nature thing, I believe.
Okay. So tell me what you mean.
Well, the sameness of mere nature, that's a little bit of a reductionism. I think there's something really packed into the fact that all men are created equal.
Well, would you say that it's in addition to their nature, or it's something other than their nature?
Well, it's in mankind's nature as mankind. This is the important thing that the created part throws into it. What are we created by? Well, we're created in the image of God. We're created by God in the image of God, and that's the plus here. This is the sense of the equality that I think has a deeper, richer meaning.
Oh, it definitely has a richer meaning, but the less rich meaning still applies, doesn't it?
Right, absolutely.
That all individuals of a certain species are equal in the sense that they share that nature equally.
It's self-evident in the fact that we mention, if you understand what nature is, then you understand by nature these things are equal as those things that they are.
Yeah, regardless of their aptitude, their size, what they can do.
Right.
Okay. So there's a basic equality in all individuals of any particular species.
I think so.
All right. Now, what you have to add to the human species is personhood.
Right.
That's what you were getting at. So why don't you, I'll listen to you.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm not sure where you want me to go with this or whether we should talk about the fact that we're in the image of God.
Yeah, let me ask you that. This is straight from Genesis chapter 1 verses 26 and 27. Does human beings being made in the image of God mean or equal, if I had an equal sign, I'd put it there, does it equal personhood?
Yes. Yes, that the fact that we're in the image of God, one, it means that we're rational creatures. We're not irrational creatures or creatures lacking reason. Even though we may see some sort of sensibility in other animals, we're talking. There's a strict separation. There is rationality. They don't have that.
Yeah. All right. So we have intellect.
Right.
We can, we can understand abstract concepts. We can make sentences. We can give arguments.
Right.
To uncover and understand truth, objective truth. So we have intellect, whereas other animals don't. And that is a power of personhood, is it not?
Right. And there's something going even beneath this surface of this is that makes us different from other animals or other things. I mean, we are things, but more importantly, we're subjects.
Yes, and that's what a person means, right?
Right.
We're subjects. We use the word I.
Right.
And that really means something really deep.
And it goes into human nature even further because we are social beings, and my I is related to your I in some sort of in some sense, we can have a relationship between the two eyes.
Well, let me challenge you there. There are obviously, pack or community animals.
Yes.
Like wolves are pack animals. Dogs, being cousins of wolves are pack. So they relate in certain ways. Obviously, ants creating an anthill, you've seen that.
Right.
Bees in their bees' nests. There's a lot of those kinds of social, and I put those in quotes, social animals. How do persons relate differently than that?
Well, we can love. I think that's the very, very important part of our rational being is that we can love the other. We can see I'm an I and I see you as an other. Yeah. And I can say, I can choose to love you, the other. And there can be this communion between the two of us that wouldn't be in the same sense of two dogs or two wolves in a pack.
Yeah.
There's not that sort of thing.
Well, as you know, animals have natural, you could say, or you can analogously call it natural love.
Right.
I mean, if you go near an alligator's children, offspring, it's going to come out and attack you.
Right.
They definitely would even sometimes sacrifice their own lives for others of the same species. So tell me what you think the difference between that and personal love is.
The idea of personal love here, and I'll go back to the ancient Greeks, the early philosophers, they thought that friendship love was the highest form of love, because it was something that we could choose as individuals. We could choose to, you and I can choose to have a friendship, as opposed to Eros, the love of desire, which they saw as a more baser type of love, which is something that involves instincts. I mean, God put this desire for romantic love within human beings in order for procreation and continuing the species.
Continuing the species. But would you say that the love between a mother and a child, sort of like the alligator and its offspring, is also instinctive? And what kind of love would that be?
Well, yeah, I think that is an affection, a type of an affection, and that's there. And often, sometimes it's pretty impressive because a mother would sacrifice, even in the animal kingdom, you would see mothers sacrifice for their offspring
All
as
right.
well.
So then, those kinds of loves that you call instinctual, and we could, just off the top of our heads, say that it relates to the opposite sex kind of attraction love and the parent-child kind of bond love. Those are present throughout the animal kingdom, just like they are with humans.
Yeah.
All right. So then when it comes to personal love, give me a solid distinction between that and that kind of animal love.
Well, I was talking about the friendship, the friendship love, the philia, that the ancients thought was the highest form of love. And I think as Christians, we regard that as something very important, but we even see a higher love than that.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was about to say, yeah.
The love that we regard as agape love, that Christian love, is that self-sacrificing love, me giving myself for the good of the other.
Even if it's not family.
Yeah, even if it's not family.
Even if it's not someone you're attracted to.
Right.
I think this is where you can sort of clarify how we differ from other animals here. We have that power, right, to choose to love the unlikable.
Right.
And to choose to care about those who we don't have any particular self-interest or selfish, you could say self-centered interest in.
Yes, well, and you're right. It is clarifying because as you were speaking, I was thinking about Christ on the cross and St. Paul's words when he talked about, you know, even though we weren't likable by God, God sacrificed His life for us, His human life for us.
And through the Gospels, Christ, you know, speaks amply about that when particularly when he tells us to love our neighbors, excuse me, to love our enemies,
right?
Not only our friends. And so, you know, this reminds me of what it means to be a person.
Right.
If I was simply an instinctual animal that had all of my, you know, set of instincts, I would not love my enemy.
Right.
I would want to kill my enemy.
Right. And in fact, there's this tribalism that Christianity definitely transcends.
Yes.
I mean, we see the tribalism that happens in the Old Testament, and things look pretty ugly because of that tribalism.
No question.
And then you all of a sudden you've got Jesus of this Jewish tribe all of a sudden it's talking about Samaritans, and Samaritans were these apostate Israelites. You know, from the Jewish perspective, they were the enemy. I mean, they interbred with the Assyrians, I think.
Right.
And
they were compared to dogs.
Yes, they were. They were the lowest of the low. And when we talk about the Good Samaritan, we've lost that sense of history of the shocking thing that Jesus said.
Yes.
Good Samaritan?
Yes.
What are you talking about, Jesus? You know?
Yes, the Jews were shocked about that.
They were shocked. When they heard about the Good Samaritan, and he's comparing this Good Samaritan to the Levite and the priest, walking by this person on the road that was hurt by these brigands, you know?
Yes.
And he's going, which one truly is the neighbor, you know?
Right. And that's, I think the Good Samaritan story is a good, good story to look at with regard to our topic tonight, which is equality, human equality. Because we create various intelligible things in our minds that make us unequal in various ways.
Yes.
Like class and race, perhaps ability,
intelligence,
fame, fortune, you know, the money and so on. So, I mean, these things, I'm not saying that these things are false. We have these things are real, but we tend to categorize our fellow humans by them.
Right.
Yeah.
We are very visual sometimes, and then in what we see, what we observe, we tend to take the look at the outer surface. We don't go beneath the surface.
Yeah, we don't
on
go
a
beneath.
Person.
That's why the show is so important. We've got to get beneath the surface here. Now, would you say though that people don't go beneath the surface because of sin?
Yes.
The effects of sin.
We are fallen. We as Christians, we believe that we are fallen. We've fallen from grace. We've separated ourselves
grace
from God.
Grace is the divine life within us,
right,
enabling us, right, to overcome all of these animal instincts, or at least to transcend them, to choose the objective true and good.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the love that we were talking about earlier. The loves that we're talking about, the friendship love, the agape love, the self-sacrificing loves, those are things rationally chosen.
Yes. And so then the only way, let me just summarize this very important segment of Beneath the Surface tonight. It seems to me what we're saying is the only way to really get a grasp of, to wrap your mind properly around this notion that we believe that all human beings are created equal, is that all human beings are made in the image and likeness of God.
Right.
And so their essence, which is a shared humanity, is not only equal in as much as we have equal, an equal nature, but we have an equal dignity in as much as we are now God's children.
Right. And I'm glad that you brought up human dignity, because that is so much part of the Christian teaching, is this idea of human dignity. Something that's very shocking even now is this idea of human dignity. Jesus specifically pointed to these lower classes, these people that would be the lowest of the low.
Yeah.
And he elevated those type of people. I mean, he was, and this happened in the Old Testament, but it was really highlighted.
Not as much.
Yeah, it was really highlighted by Jesus.
Let's give some examples. The adulteress.
Right. Oh, that is a very good example. I mean, you have this woman who's caught in the act of adultery.
Yeah.
And, you know, this hits at two levels at least, because if she's caught in the act of adultery, where is the guy? Where's the male in this?
Yeah.
Is that good? So where's the male in this? You know, there's obviously this ancient disparity between men and women.
Right.
In ancient times.
Well, before Christ, men could divorce their wives and women could not divorce their husbands.
Right.
And men could have more than one wife, and of course women could never. So certainly, and men could have concubines. Christ came to stop all of that and said the equality of the sexes means an equality of morality between you when it comes to marriage and family.
Yeah, we're going to continue the other part of this adulterous story. Yes.
Yes. And then I want to get into the shepherds.
Okay.
Who were the lowest of the lowest classes in the ancient Judaism, which of course they were the first ones to see the child Jesus in the manger, other than Joseph and Mary, and a few others that we will point out. And as much as when we want to get a grasp of what we're talking about when we speak of all men are created equal. You're listening to Beneath the Surface, Paul Morano with Bob LeBlanc, and you will be back right after this. Don't go anywhere. Here we go, 978-454-4980. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP. Paul Morano with my guest, Mr. Bob LeBlanc, at brand new Digs. The studio is all rearranged and moved. And I kind of like it, Mr. Bob.
Yeah, I do too, except exactly right now,
yes,
they may not be able to hear it, but I can hear this motorcycle going down the street.
we're that close to the, to the streets. But it's interesting. It makes it more like we're out in public.
Yes.
Instead of hidden away, you know.
Yeah, we can see people walking by and we can wave to them and they can wave to us.
And they have waved to us.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. It's a little bit more homey.
Yes.
More relaxed feeling, you know.
So before the break, we were delving beneath the surface about what? About equality and how it relates to...
Well, we were talking about Jesus bringing up the parable, the story of Jesus and the adulteress, and we talked about the first part, the equality between men and women that Jesus was bringing into the mix here.
Jesus now enables us to recognize and commands us to treat the morality of males in the same way as the morality of females. In other words, there is no real double standard when it comes to extramarital sexual activity.
Right.
That's the bottom line, one of the bottom lines of the gospel moral teaching. But continue.
Well, the other half of this, and this is a problem that everybody has, is that they caught a sinner. And they caught what they thought at that time was a terrible sin.
Yeah.
And I wish we thought of adultery as a terrible sin in this day and age, but we don't. But
can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
They also thought that fornication was just as bad.
Right.
They would stone to death a girl that wasn't a virgin before marriage.
Right.
So, I mean, put to the side the penalty, which is stoning to death. Nobody today in their right mind would advocate for that.
Right.
But the seriousness of sexual union becoming one flesh with somebody who was not your spouse is something that is enviable for people today. I mean, we should have some of that.
Right.
Much of that. And we have lost it.
And yes, that's true. I just want to continue on with this idea here is that and I think Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion, actually captures this very, very well because they show it in the scene and you can see the contrition in the woman's eyes in that film.
Yeah.
And you can see the entire thing change at this point when Jesus lifts her up and he forgives her. He raises her up. So you have to, in the thinking of that time, this adulteress is really, really very, very small. I mean, they are willing to stone her, to take her life for this fornication.
Yeah.
And then Jesus is saying, no, wait a second. There's a human being. There's a person here that we need to treat.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the important thing is that Jesus is taking this person who's all of a sudden become the lowest of the low.
Yes.
And he's raising her up and lifting her up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how, and of course at the end of their small diatribe between Jesus and the adulteress, he doesn't say, go and don't worry about it. He says, go, but sin no more.
Right.
And, of course, that second part is very important, too.
Right. The problem with a lot of Christian teaching is that a lot of people take a part of it in isolation from the rest.
Exactly.
And I think that's really the true definition of heresy, is that you're exalting some portion of it apart from the whole.
And in a sense, that's kind of like the definition of evil.
Yes.
If you were just to do something that was purely evil, nobody would buy it.
Right.
But if you add evil to good, and then you slowly make it a little more evil as time goes on, people will buy it, like the frog in the boiling water.
Yes.
978-454-4980 is our phone number here beneath the surface. Delving with Mr. Bob LeBlanc on the question of equality here, and all men are created equal. So then we talked about how the notion that God created man in his own image. In the divine image he created him, male and female he created them.
Right.
That's Genesis. Skip to the Gospels. You have the story of Jesus raising up the Samaritan, who was supposed to be one of the lowest of the lows, raising up the adulteress, which, of course, was a great sin, in forgiving her because she was repentant, raising up people like the shepherds, who were considered the lowest of the low classes of people in those times.
Right. The widow's mite.
The widow's mite, yeah.
You know, the mite being that small donation that she made compared to what the wealthy could give. And he's going, she gave more because she gave all that she had, even though in amount it was very, very small.
Right. The entire Gospel of Luke really is filled with Jesus making things even. You know, the metaphor is that he's bringing down the mountains and he's raising the valleys and he's bringing, at least enabling us to recognize the equality of all human beings and the equal dignity of the human person as made in the image and likeness of God.
Right. I just want to bring up this one thing about human dignity that I got through John Paul II, and I think it is definitely Christian. But he talks about you treating human beings not as objects, but as subjects. Not to use them as a means, but rather to treat them as persons.
Always as an end in themselves.
As an end in themselves. That's exactly what John Paul was talking about. Ends and not means.
Yeah.
And I think we can get lost in the weeds when we get into this secular idea of human equality. We can kind of forget really the point of this equality is how we treat other persons. Mm. And often enough, we kind of get lost when we're just thinking about these persons as like rights-bearing beings, and I want to stand for my rights compared to your rights, and these things are in competition, and we kind of lose sight of the fact that we want to treat these people as ends and not the means to those ends.
I'm glad you brought up this notion of rights.
Yes.
Because obviously they're important because rights, we all have rights to attain those things that satisfy our natural human inclinations. We all have those. Now, but putting that aside, it seems like at least since the French Revolution, we have had an attitude of we demand our rights, but we want to ignore some of our responsibilities.
Right. Well,
and I just want to say that there's one place in the Gospels that the word equal or equality is actually, you know, they're black and white.
Is it?
Yeah, there's no, you don't have to read into it. There's no subtlety. And I want you to comment on this because it seems like it goes diametrically opposed to our attitude in the Western world today about demanding our rights and not really caring all that much about our responsibilities. And that's this. It's from Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 through 7. Christ Jesus, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking on the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men. And then it went on to talk about how he took on a cross and died for our sins and so forth.
Okay.
But that kind of not reaching for equality in the sense of being humble. Talk about that.
Oh, well, that's another aspect of Christianity that I think is not really caught by the secular stuff. I remember mentioning that I need to become more humble. And I've got remarks, and there are people going, well, what are you talking about? You want to treat yourself like dirt? You know, there's this right. kind of like misunderstanding. And in a sort of way, I want to lower myself because I realize through Christianity, through Jesus, I realize that I'm very, very prideful. And I'm trying to stomp out this pride of self in order to love Jesus better and love my neighbor better. I recognize this in myself and I recognize this in others. And in fact, because I've seen it in others, I've been able to recognize it in myself that we tend to exalt ourselves.
Yeah.
In a deformed sort of way.
Yes.
And so taking from Philippians right there where Jesus lowered himself, and in fact, yes. Jesus being both God and man, he didn't have a problem in seeing the reality about himself. And yet still, I mean, he legitimately had this claim to equality with God.
Yes.
You know, because he was God.
Yeah, he was a person of God.
And he comes not the way we would expect the Gospels to happen. He comes in the most lowly fashion possible. Mm. He doesn't choose, you know, King Herod's family or anything like that. He chooses the family of a humble carpenter.
Yeah. And he doesn't come into Jerusalem on white horses and chariots. He comes in on an ass.
Right.
On a donkey.
And so there's this stuff where he's not coming with a huge bang, but he's coming with a whisper.
Yes. Yes.
And then he ends it all with the most incomprehensible thing. I mean, pagans encountering Christians, they're saying, what, that's your God that you crucified?
Yeah.
And in fact, the crucifix was something that developed later because crucifixion was so degrading at the time.
Right.
People were going, that's your God? You know.
Right. Well, you know what's interesting? Another angle that's interesting about this passage of Philippians is that Jesus, who is the new Adam, is doing exactly the opposite of what the old Adam did.
Right.
Now, think about this. It says here in Philippians that although he was in the form of God, he did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped.
Right.
What was Adam and Eve doing in that forbidden fruit? They were grasping, right?
Yes.
They were grasping at good things, but they were trying to be godlike. They were trying to be their own gods.
Right.
They were, and in that forbidden grasping of the forbidden fruits, that's exactly what humility is not. So humility is not going after all the gusto that you can for yourself, like we're taught when we're kids.
Right.
Humility is saying,
who gets the most toys wins.
Humility is an attitude that says, God will provide. I need to understand his will so that I can do it regardless of the consequences. That's humility.
Right.
Adam did not do that. Jesus came as the new Adam and did that and showed us what humility is, right?
Right. And in fact, St. Paul is using that word. He humbled himself.
Right.
In a very exaggerated way.
Yeah.
I mean, when Christians talk about humility for themselves, they're trying to talk about the reality, the truth of themselves with respect to God.
All right. So then we only have about 2 minutes left.
Okay.
Just want to mention that, what was I going to say? I was going to say something to sort of wrap this whole thing up, that human beings are, even though, this is what I was going to say, that even though we are different and we have many differences, and it's funny, This reminds me of the liberal pin that says celebrate differences. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Oh, no, I haven't.
Okay. All right. We have differences, right?
We do.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think the concept of equality, all men are created equal, people kind of want to look for a sameness rather than, and there's no sameness, you know?
And those differences are especially stark and marked by nature in males and females.
Yes.
All right. And this, of course, the secular world today has gone crazy in the opposite direction, trying to pretend that there isn't.
Any disparity between men and women must be some sort of structural kind of thing,
exactly.
Prejudice.
Exactly, some kind of prejudice or bigotry. So then it is our nature to be male and female, to have complementary differences, not only physically, but psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually, generally speaking. And if these weren't the case, we wouldn't be attracted to each other, and we wouldn't be creating families and human beings, and, the species would not continue. So it's all part of God's plan that differences, equality and dignity, of course, but differences in physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual attributes are part of the creation and are very, very good.
Yes, it highlights that we can't do it by ourselves.
Yeah.
And that is very much contrary to the current ethos within America.
We need God and we need each other.
Right.
Yeah. And that difference is good, but where are we equal? We're equal in human dignity.
We are.
And value. Thank you, Mr. Bobbert. Good show tonight.
Thank you.
All men are created equal. Cindy is equal, sure. Bob is equal, and I am equal. Goodbye, fellow equals.